Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to read a few of the iTunes reviews everybody's been sending in to enter for the contest. Thank you so much. I've been just so touched, and it's just so sweet to read everything people say. And if you did someone and didn't contact me, let me know who you are so you can be entered to win a contest, because some people didn't tell me who they were. Okay, so here's some of the reviews so far. This podcast has me hungry for nutrients by Jeremy, the veteran artist. He says, you can tell the host is passionate about organic gardening and ask questions she wants the answers for herself. Super advice from her guests as well. Chris at the Journey of Success says, your healthy garden one-stop shop. Great show, Jackie. I love gardening and your show really helps me to understand how to create the biggest yield in my small garden while doing it in a way that is both healthy and delicious. Thank you. I'm not sure how to say this. B-A-T-R-A-U-D-T. Batrout. Said, learning to grow. As I got older, I became fascinated with gardening and working with my hands. I'm so glad to hear someone who is sharing their passion for organic gardening and bringing this show to teach others who love to listen. Here's one from Sweeney McMahon that says, eat your veggies. Jackie B. serves up just the right amount of gardening insight and inspiration to make this my year-round addiction. Never too much science or clinical nutrition. Gardening is really about enjoying life. A great gardener who just touched my heart today when I saw this said, I enjoy all of the different guest Jackie interviews. They are all amazing people, which is so true, with lots of real world experience to share. I never knew about so many different types of farmers. I have learned a lot and enjoy listening to her podcast when I'm outside working in my garden. I think she is a very sweet person and kind to both her guests and listeners. Thank you for working so hard to spread the word about how good it is to grow your own food. Keep up the good work. And that just, like, totally, I couldn't believe that when I opened that up today. So thank you everyone who entered this contest, and I will run the raffle. I was going to maybe print them and put them in a bag and pull a thing out of a hat. So there's 43 reviews on my iTunes account. So if you want to enter the next contest, it's never too early. So it'll be everybody after May 1st who enters and leaves a review and sends me an email, either a screenshot or just tell me what you wrote, and you can be entered in the contest. Thank you everybody so much for entering and just enjoying the show. My listeners, my guests, I just really appreciate all of you. And so on to today's show from a wonderful member of the Facebook group who I met on Twitter and is now here to share his great story.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. And I am super excited to introduce another podcaster that I think I met on Twitter. And he's going to tell us about his adventures in Minnesota, and his show is called The Small Scale Life. And you know, I'm always promoting other podcasts because I believe in a world of abundance. And so I think, you know, if you can get something from my show and get something from his show and get something from some other people's shows, we all, you know, are better for it. So today from The Small Scale Life is Tom Domress. So welcome to the show, Tom.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm just really stoked to be on your podcast and looking forward to today.
Well, I am excited because I know you are going to share lots of great golden seeds and just tons of stuff about gardening and maybe some podcasting and some blogging and some just cool information. So why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself and the small scale life?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I am a husband and 22 years tomorrow, so that'll be great. That'll be an awesome anniversary. Nice. And I've got two boys. One is 21, one is 17. My background, I'm a professional civil engineer, and I've worked on railroad projects all over the country for my entire career. Recently, I was on a $2 billion light rail project as a manager of engineering, but now I work for the federal government, and I, you know, work on different railroad projects. So my first love was railroads, but my second is gardening, and now this whole blogging, podcasting thing. So I am a gardener. I've got about 120 square feet of raised beds, and I am renting, so I can't till up the whole backyard and you know, plant all of it. So it's been kind of an interesting ride. And my blog is smallscalelife.com. And I've also launched a podcast and had to retool and adjust it, you know, as we launched on January 1. But we're moving forward. So, you know, the mission of Small Scale Life is really to develop a sustainable life through healthy living, gardening, frugal living, and also having some adventures and fun along the way. And we talk a little bit about weight loss. I'm on a weight loss journey. We talk a lot about gardening and some adventures, you know, going on some date nights to some fun places and doing some fun things. And the latest piece that we're going to add is the frugal living piece. My wife is really taking charge of trying to make our budget work and make our dollar stretch, and I'm plugging in with that too. So we've got a lot of content that's coming, and we've also got, you know, we've got a lot out there. So, and we've only started Small Scale Living in November. Before that, I had Small Scale Gardening, which was all about gardening. I started that in 2014 and got into the blogging world and really got some things figured out and how it works, and I wanted to talk about a little bit more. So I opened up Small Scale Life, and that's where we're doing everything now. So it's really kind of fun.
What's your wife's name?
Julie. She is a wedding florist, and she has her own business, a studio business here at home, and it's called Julia's Blooms. So she does all kinds of weddings and events here in the Twin Cities and out surrounding area, and she's had that business for a number of years. So it's kind of fun.
Okay. Awesome. Well, yeah. So exciting. And I love looking at your pictures of your family, and just I'm sure we're going to learn a ton. So interesting that you're an engineer,
right,
and a gardener. Now, okay, so I do kind of like to start the show actually talking about your very first gardening experience.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? What'd you grow? Mm-hmm. Who were you with? Are you from Minnesota?
I'm actually from Wisconsin, and my wife will start snickering over at her desk, because I've lived most of my life in Minnesota. We also lived in Illinois for 9 years for job purposes. But for most part, I've lived in Minnesota, but all of my roots are back in Wisconsin, and I do have some property over there as well. So, you know, hopefully someday soon we'll be looking at Wisconsin. But all about my first gardening experience. I've been around gardening ever since I was a little kid. My grandparents, my parents, they had gardens all of my life. And they were the kind of gardens where, you know, you have a plot, you till it up every spring, you plant some stuff, you know, tomatoes and squash and beans, and usually what happened was, you know, they weeded over, you know, by mid season. Well, it didn't take too long before the grass and other weeds popped up. So almost punishment was going out and weeding the garden. I would have my own little space where I had some carrots and lettuce and whatever, and I think the rabbits would always eat them up. But it was fun, and it kind of funny. Near our property in central Wisconsin, my dad actually went and bought a farm in the 1970s. He was a professional football player, and when he retired, they were living in central Wisconsin, and it's like, okay, what are we going to do now? Hey, let's try farming. And he had no experience in farming. And he bought this little hobby farm, 120 acres, 140 acres, had cows and pigs and chickens, and just kind of like, what are we doing? So he made some friends in the area, and they were starting a farm, and then he got sick and they had to sell it. But I've got that in my background, you know, back in the early childhood. Now, fast forward, we were moving around and with my job and everything, and we were living in Illinois, and it was right around the crash of 2009. I was an office leader at a consulting firm, and you know, I tried some planting in some containers, and it's some measly tomatoes, and they didn't do very well. You know, I didn't know what I was doing and didn't get very good sun. And our neighbors across the street were like, yeah, we got so much produce, I just don't know what to do with it. And I was like, what are you doing? And they pulled out the good old-fashioned Mel Bartholomew all-new square foot gardening book, and I've got it right in my hands. And they're like, you got to read this, you got to do this. And you know, I was like, oh, I don't want to do the weeding. I just, that's, I got, you know, I earned my stripes doing that when I was a kid. But they were like, no, no weeds. There's no weeds. This is great. And my wife looked at it and she's like, oh, they have cells. It's organized. You know, you can have this little 1x1 foot, you know, area for this certain vegetable, and we can do this. Okay. So we gave it a shot, read the book. We got excited. And I built 2 4x4 boxes out of cedar and a really simple compost bin out of wire. And we started going, and we had a good harvest the first year, and we got excited about it. And I just kind of took over it. It was like my stress reliever. You know, I'd be at work doing all these projects and serving clients, and I'd come home and I'd go out and water the garden. That was like stress relief, you know? And that was a lot of fun. That's kind of where it started. And I just thought that, you know, learning some skills, you know, the crash is going on. I didn't know if I would have a job, but hey, we could get something out of the garden and eat it if nothing else while we figured things out. So that's kind of where that all happened. And the best part about the raised beds, yeah, we did not have any weeds. In my gardens today, they don't have any weeds because I have these raised beds and I've got a couple layers underneath that keep the weeds out. So I don't go back to that horrible, oh, I got a weed. It's pretty cool.
Wow. Well, there's all sorts of golden nuggets, and I think you're just going to inspire people that are like, and I think that's one of the things I've really learned is that there are tons of shortcuts that you can take and things you can do. Mm-hmm. I always talk about, like, because my husband and I, when we, up until 2 years ago, we've had very limited water. Mm. So I always tell people that when you have limited water, you really learn to water the roots. You don't get weeds because you're not wasting a drop of water, and no weed is getting any of your water. But mm-hmm. I also think a big piece of that is up until he built this little mini farm, when we dug the new well.
Sure.
Everything was in raised beds. Uh-huh. And I think they're key. And I'm begging him, like, we have to go to my mom's and build her a raised bed. Like, it's going to change gardening for her, you know, and just, you know, I think that's a great piece of inspiration you're going to share for people there. And then also that, you know, that you came home from work and it was a stress reliever and it was nice to be in your garden. And just also that you were able to do it while having a full-time job.
Yep. Yep. And that was the key. I mean, the beans aren't going to yell back at you unless, you know, they're starting to get a blight or something, right? And then they're looking for something else. So, you know, it's just, hey, we're here. I see the bird over there. It's nice. You know, it's soothing. And, you know, pick a few cucumbers or some tomatoes. Hey, this is ripe. Great. You know, it's some of the best. And you get pride out of that, too, you know, that we built this. We made this happen. And it's really exciting. It's really exciting. That's what I really love about it.
Awesome. Especially, I hope my friend Daniela is listening because she just built a raised bed this weekend and is excited. And so this is going to inspire her too, I hope.
Right. And what you're saying about the watering, that is a big deal, especially out west. Look at California where they had big droughts going on all over the country. We have some water shortages. In the summer, you have the watering bans. Using rain barrels is a great way to capture some of that water. Now, I know it's illegal in some states and they're trying to reverse that, but there are creative ways to try to water. And I just wrote an article last week. One of my readers had wrote in and said, hey, I'm really frustrated. My husband is extremely frustrated, did all this research, and then he was growing tomatoes. It got a blight and they all died. It turns out he was watering, he's watering the tomato. There were 2 sprinklers, 2 different zones of sprinklers that were hitting the tomatoes, the leaves, and that just encourages this blight. You really want to get the roots, not the whole, you know, all the leaves and everything. That just encourages the fungus and the blight to attack. So, yeah, water, how you water is important, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. You want to water the roots. You don't want to get, my husband's always yelling at me, watch the leaves. Don't get water on the leaves, especially if it's during the day. You know, if you do it at night, I think they'll dry.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you do it first thing in the morning, maybe it can help. But for the most part, yeah, you really want to watch your water. And I've had a few guests come on and talk about the best thing you can do to prevent mold or any of that is keep things clean.
Yes.
You know, make sure any foliage that's like touching the ground, either pick that off or, you know, try to keep your plants dry that way. So,
oh, yeah.
Wow, you're already giving off tons of tips just and we're only on the second question.
Yeah, I know. And that's something that I do a lot of is pruning up the tomatoes. I mean, we'll talk about it in a couple minutes. But side stems, you know, get those low-hanging branches out of there. I don't want a big, bushy tomato plant. I want a productive tomato plant. But, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute.
All right. Well, so how did you learn how to garden organically then?
Yeah, it really came back to Mel Bartholomew and his method of the raised gardens with compost. He uses manure, and I know manure can have some salts in it, but you look at a fertilizer. Fertilizers do have a lot of chemicals. They've got salts in there, and essentially, you over time, you are poisoning that soil. So, really, we're looking at organic ways to maintain the soil and build really rich soil. I did look at the Mitlighter gardening method. That's another method developed by some folks out in Utah, and it's used all over the world, and it is very productive. There's some things I like about it, like the raised beds and the intensive plant spacing. I mean, they get really intense, almost like a market gardener with how tight they pack, plant the plants. But they use fertilizer weekly, and they put, you know, fertilizer, water it in, and they treat the soil almost like, they call it a medium. And I know they do that in hydroponics and such, but soil is that key ingredient, that key building block that everything, you know, it gets where it's getting all of its nutrients. And I think if you have really good compost, really rich compost with organics and, you know, a lot of life, and even a compost tea, you know, you don't need the fertilizer. And you know, if something happens, you know, and you can't get fertilizer, well, then you got to figure out how to do it with compost. And Mel is a civil engineer too, so that spoke to me. It's like, hey, if that guy can make it, I can make that too. So I really follow. I like what Mel about Bartholomew and square foot gardening has done. Also, folks like Curtis Stone and Jean-Martin Fortier, they're market gardeners, urban farmers. They are using compost. They're not using fertilizers. You can do this and have a commercial business and not use the fertilizer. So that spoke to me too.
Okay. So do you have some tips for building compost? What do you put in your compost? Like, especially if you're living in an urban area. Because I know my mom, I grew up with this milk carton on my, next to the sink. She always had compost. But now, I don't know if it's because my dad's gone or what's going on, but like she's so panicked about animals getting in her compost, squirrels and raccoons and rabbits living in an urban area. She's worried about them, which is weird because, you know, we have tons of animals around here, but nobody gets in my compost but my chickens.
Right. And they must love it. I love the stuff that's in there. That's for sure.
But do you have tips for like a compost in an urban area or, you know, and just if somebody doesn't know anything about composting?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about layers. And I use, you know, during the season, I'm using vegetable scraps or potato, you know, potato peels, apple peels, you know, just stuff that you cut off the veggies and usually throw away. I put that in there. No meats, you know, meats attract the raccoons. No meat, no animal feces or any of that. But I use, you know, vegetable scraps. I use grass clippings is big, you know, that really generates a lot of heat because you really want the compost, the soil to heat up, and that's going to cook any weeds, you know, weeds or seeds or any of that stuff that's in your compost pile. A really good thing too, you want to put a little brown matter like cardboard or paper, you know, shredded paper or even some crunched up branches in there, and that'll give a different, you know, give different layers and
or
just build it up.
Also in the fall, the leaves.
Oh God,
you know,
leaves.
Those are good
brown
material.
Huge. Yeah, absolutely. My compost is full of leaves right now. And I like to put a layer of compost or leaves on the beds before I button them up for the year. And then they have a nice thick layer of leaves on those too. So just the soil is getting better. And that's what you want to see is your soil getting better. That makes me pretty excited.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I always say that the grass clippings, to me, that's because like our compost can like, go from kitchen scraps to compost in almost 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it right in the middle right. of the summer when we have a lot of grass clippings and you're just churning it every day and stuff. Like, it's funny because my brother came on and talked, and he's, so my family's in Long Island. And mm-hmm. so he talked about his compost bin and what it's like to be like, you know, because him and his wife are really busy and they have 2 kids and he works like crazy hours and just, you know, when he just talks about, they just throw everything in there.
Yep.
And it kind of sits through the winter. And when he goes, and so he only does it really once a year, whereas Mike and I, we have 2 compost bins and we're
yeah.
constantly going and they're turning and like, I can't keep up, you know, I mean, but you know, our gardening situations are different, but,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think those are great tips. And,
right. And that's, I wish I had another 2 sections because I'd let some compost age for a bit and I'd start another one and then I have a third just, you know, because mm-hmm. you're going to be flipping between the three. That's what I would really love. And I was using, for the past 2 years, I've just been using a tote, but I was generating too much. I needed more. So I went to, I actually took an old pallet and built some with scrap wood and an old pallet that I had. And boy, that thing just holds a lot. And I need another one. I need 2 more.
We do too. And especially like, Mike built one kind of for like the bigger stuff that takes longer mm-hmm. to decompose, like
oh, yeah.
corn stalks and,
mm-hmm.
you know, just things that, and then we actually bought a chipper to kind of like, make that stuff smaller and hopefully it will build. But yeah, I just feel like you can never have enough compost.
Oh yeah. And that's key too, is chop up the bigger stuff. You know, if you can figure out a way,
yeah, like banana peels, watermelon
yeah.
rinds, mm-hmm. Eggshells are another good thing I always like to throw in our compost. And coffee grounds. Mike and I are big coffee drinkers, so we have a ton of coffee grounds.
Yes, and yes, I agree with both of those. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Although, I gotta say, somebody told me a tip on the podcast last year, I can't remember who, but she was saying to, we saved a bunch of eggshells this year, mm-hmm. and we were... And he's got them like dried in a paper bag. And he's, I can't remember what he's going to do. If he's going to put them like directly under where the tomato plants are going to go. Mm-hmm. I'll have to go back and listen or figure that out. But that was like something we've never done before, is like actually just eggshells somewhere. I can't remember what they're for, if they're for a bug. I'll have to research that. But usually, yeah, eggshells definitely go. It seems
yeah,
like another big one is fish bones. Like, even though I know you're not supposed to put any, but the bones from fish are good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing about the eggshells, I did the same thing. I used when I plant my tomatoes, I have this little method that I do. I throw coffee grounds in the hole, then I put eggshells in there, and then I put the plant in. I've heard put some aspirin too. That you're kind of creating this mix that it's going to give them some. You know, the eggshell is calcium, so that's going to help with the blossom end rot. The coffee grounds are nitrogen, that'll make it nice and green and give it like an energy boost. And I think the aspirin has, I forget what that is too. But yes, you know, so I kind of go through those 3 things. What I found digging up in my tomato bed this year is I found, hey, those eggshells didn't break down like I thought they would. So I was looking online and some folks said, oh, you can create a concoction with vinegar, some water, and the eggshells, and that'll actually release the calcium, create carbon dioxide, and some more water. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. So you can make almost like the slurry of water, vinegar, and eggshells, and that'll actually release the calcium and let the plants absorb it. So I'm going to do some more research on that, and I might try that. And then you asked another question about, what was your other question about? I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know.
I know. I've been talking
too
much.
I think it was just about, which I think you already addressed, was just like keeping the animals out in a small space.
Oh, fish bones. Yeah, fish bones.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Funny story about that. Fish will break down and in the soil and really add a lot of nutrients to the soil. My grandma's secret was my grandpa was a great sportsman. He would go out and he was an insurance salesman in Racine, Wisconsin, and had a heart attack. He needed to have less stress. So they actually went out and bought a resort in central Wisconsin, lived there for 50 years. And he was such a big sportsman. He would go out and he would catch all of these fish and he'd bring them home and he'd say, here you go, I brought home supper plus more meals. And my grandma was like, I can't clean all these. And so she would sneak some and put bury them in the garden. And she had the richest soil. My grandpa, I don't know if he ever knew or not, but, you know, half the fish would end up in the garden. And somehow the raccoons never found it. That's the thing you got to worry about then, is you have that rotting fish. You must have got it deep enough where they couldn't smell it. But that's another way to, you know, to really add nutrients to your soil. I've heard people will do the eggshells, the coffee grounds, the aspirin, and fish, you know, fish scraps into the hole, and then they'll drop the tomato in. And I just never wanted it. I know there's three big fat raccoons that run around the neighborhood, so I'm not going to, you know, entice them into my garden. I have enough trouble with squirrels.
What was the other thing? One thing, just as a side note, listeners, when Mike plants almost anything, he digs the hole and he pours like a coffee can full of water in there. Mm. And lets that water soak in, and then he puts his plant in there. I don't know. You just made me think of it when you were talking about what you put in your show. And the other thing I was thinking, she told us like you were supposed to crush those eggshells in the blender. So they were almost like powder.
I've used a mortar and pestle. And again, those chunks that I was finding in the garden was how I found, you know, those were the chunks I ground up last year with mortar and pestle. We got at a thrift store a Cuisinart coffee grinder. And man, that thing is awesome. And that's what I went through everything I've had, and I just ground it up into a nice fine powder. So I got really small chunks now. It's going to be great.
What a great tip, too. Yeah. You know, who would think of that, to go to a thrift store and get a coffee grinder for just for your compost type of stuff? That's a great idea.
Right. You know, you don't want the eggshell to, you know, scratch the inside of your big, you know, food processor, your Ninja or your Nutribullet or anything like that. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will. But, you know, just a cheapy $7 coffee grinder. Perfect. Just works great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to tell us about something that grew well this year? Is this the tomatoes?
The tomatoes. They did great. I mean, I had tomatoes that were over 13 feet tall.
Oh, and my goodness. Fairly, no way.
They were great, and they were really productive. Really big fan of Amish Pace and Alpaca Roma tomatoes. Those are heirlooms I got from Seed Savers Exchange and just worked great. The aroma, the Alpaca Romas, they don't have many seeds, and they're really good. The Amish Paste is more, the Amish Paste is more of a, you know, juicier tomato. But, you know, I was really big on cutting back the side stems, you know, the lower branches. You know, anytime they even thought about coming, basically I trimmed them up to the lowest fruit, and then I would take off any suckers. So, you know, that they really grew well. And, this year I'm going to see if I'm going to cut the growing tip once they're about 8 feet tall and see if that spurs production. Cause I, you know, tall is nice, but I want production. So, those grew well. Those grew really well.
Okay. So I just got back up a sec. When you say trim them up to the lowest fruit, so you're trimming them. When you plant it, when it starts to grow and then it gets the flowers, this is after it's got the flowers?
Basically, I wait until they develop some tomatoes on them, and then I'll take them up. But, you know, you might get some low branches that are sitting right on the ground, you know, and I just don't, I'm so paranoid about Septoria and these other funguses that I'll take those off, but I'll let them grow up a little bit. And then see, I, another thing I do with my tomatoes is I trellis them, and I have a simple trellis built with 2x4s and conduit, and I'll string a line down from the conduit, which is like 7 feet in the air. And I'll string it down and wrap it around the plant. And I've also got a line that's by the, it's actually an old clothesline that's along the base of the box, and so where the plants, the stem of the plant is. So I'll tie off around that line, and I'll start wrapping the line around the stem of the plant. And so I don't use tomato cages; I just use these lines. And it's a technique that I learned from the Mitleiter folks. Again, you take different pieces from different folks, and you take what works best. And it's almost like a greenhouse style of gardening in a raised bed. and it's worked really well for me for the past 3 years. So, yeah, once that plant grows up, I'll start taking off the side stems, but not right away. You know, we'll let the thing grow and develop. And but once the first fruit starts to set and I can see the tomato there, I'll take off the lower branches. They're just taking energy from the plant, and when you take off those lower side stems, those lower branches, that tells the tomato, hey, my stalk better get, I better stop growing so tall. I better get a thicker stalk. I better put more energy into the first fruit as well. So.
Wow. Can you spell mitlitter?
Sure. Let's see. I think I can. Let's see. MITTLEIDER. Mitlitter. And it's Mitlitter Gardening Method. And I think it's foodforeveryone.com or growfood.com, I think is there.
Okay. Because one thing I've learned as a podcaster is it's best to have everybody spell resources. Oh, even though I put them in the show notes and spend a lot of time making sure my show notes, at least they might not have every word spelled correctly and there might be some typos, but the links, I try to always make sure the links are there. So if you're driving, don't worry about, you know, getting it. I will have the link there. But if you're not and you want to write it down right now, that's how you spell Mitlitter. So...
Right, and their site is growfood.com. Really easy. Jacob Mitlitter was a plant dude out at the university, Brigham Young. He's a Brigham Young guy. So he's been all over the world teaching this method when he was alive. So
cool. Okay. So that's your thing that grew well this year was the tomatoes, right?
Yes, tomatoes did well.
Okay. So what are you excited to try new next year? Like, what's your big project you're going to put into action?
Sure. One thing that I'm finding is I planted too many seeds this spring. So I've only got 120 square feet. And I think I've got everything kind of booked, all my raised beds booked. So I'm going to try some vertical gardening, meaning one of my followers on Instagram, he started his own urban farm where he's using grain gutters. And I know that's not a lot of soil and they dry out quick. So I'm going to try some rain gutters filled with soil with drain holes. And I'm going to put leafy greens and maybe basil in those. And I've got too many leafy greens here to chew up the beds. I've got other things planned for those beds. So I'm going to try to go vertical and see how they grow. So there'll be a foot spacing between the rain gutters. They'll have drain holes in them. I've toyed with the idea of providing a water source underneath, but that'll add cost to it. I just have to plan that out a little bit and start testing some things. But I'm going to go vertical. We'll see how it does.
Now, you're still working full-time?
Mm-hmm.
And doing all this?
Yeah, my wife thinks I'm kind of crazy.
You must have a bundle of energy.
I don't know. I just, the weekends, I just kind of, you know, I get into project mode and I, you know, like Saturday, if I can, I'll spend all day out there or Sunday. I mean, the beds are in place already and I, she keeps telling me that I shouldn't add more, but I just kind of do.
Yeah, it's an addiction. So now what are you doing with all this food? Is it just for your family? Or are you selling some of it? Like...
Not selling anything yet. You know, one of the, on my second podcast, I talked about the Growing Your Greens Challenge. So I'm going to try to knock our leafy greens off of our grocery list. And I thought I was going to do more of it this winter. It didn't quite work out that way. But I've got a ton of lettuce and kale and spinach going right now. So I'm going to see if I can knock the leafy greens off the grocery list for a while. We're big into canning, so I make a killer salsa, and that's one of your questions coming up too. So salsa, I make a lot of salsa. I make pickles, killer pickles. We're going to try to really process that, and that's part of the healthy living and frugal living too, is to stock the pantry, stock the freezer with as much of the produce as we can. So when we get into winter months, we've got that stuff ready to go, and we can pull it out and use it for whatever. Pesto, we'll pre-make that and freeze it up. You know, the pickles will be there. I still have some pickles from last year. I've got corn relish from last year. I've got some jellies and such. You know, we're going to try to use as much as we can. I'm not selling anything yet. Yeah.
Tell us about what your Growing the Greens challenge, because I know my listeners are always looking for a challenge, maybe not mine, because nobody has signed up for my 2016 challenge yet. Last year, I was like, I just wanted everybody to pick one food to grow for like 2 months, like something that they normally buy for 2 months, like let's say it was lettuce or broccoli or something, and just pick one food. And I didn't get very many people, but I got like a dozen last year at least. This year I was like, all right, I'm going to make it simpler. All you have to do is plant a seed, a flower, a tomato, anything. Just one seed, put it in the ground, plant anything. And nobody signed up. So I don't know what it is, but maybe they'll tell me. So tell us about your challenge. Maybe they'll go to your site and sign up for your challenge.
This is all me. I'm not, I haven't challenged anyone else.
Oh,
this
is all,
this is just for me, for myself. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Is to see if I can do it. How much would it take? My 21-year-old, he's a speedy runner. He and a workout freak and nutrition guy, and he loves salad. He's going to go away to college this fall, but I'm going to, you know, while he's here, I'm going to see if I can, you know, supply enough for his demands.
Does he do the green smoothie thing in the morning?
Oh, well, we've gotten into that. Julie got a Ninja for Christmas, and she loves it. And that has been great because it's just so versatile. And she'll make smoothies. So, yeah, throw kale and spinach in there, and it's green, but it's awesome. So, yeah, we've got smoothies in the morning. We've got lettuce. You know, we've got salads at night. And, you know, to see if I can – you know, because we'll go to the Sam's and we'll get the big romaine hearts, which is five in a big pack, and that'll be gone in a few days. And so I've got to get aggressive on how much I grow to see if I can actually knock it off our grocery list. So this is all on me, you know, to see if I can grow it and what it takes to actually do it. You know, I thought it'd be an interesting experiment. So far, I have not, it's not growing fast enough, but I did get a salad out of it this week. So, hey, winning.
You grow.
Excellent. Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. Well, I like that. And that's been like, that was Mike's goal with us, was always originally just to grow enough food for us that we don't have to, you know, how much can we supplement? How much can we grow so we don't have to buy fruit and vegetables, especially. Right. I'm a big vegetable eater, but salad's definitely one of mine. I don't know. You said you were kind of listening to my show to check it out. So the guy who just aired, I think I finally got him up Tuesday afternoon sometime instead of Monday like I was supposed to. I'm having a really hard time getting back on my schedule. It's funny because I met this guy in Paris, but he's from America and he's over there. And he originally was selling these things in New Orleans. But they're made in Wyoming, but it's a vertical growing system. And it's so funny because when I describe it, I'm like, they look like rain gutters.
Yeah, yeah.
They totally do, but it was the coolest thing. I loved it. He had this whole aquaponics setup, and it's really neat with the, you know, the fish in the bottom. And then But yeah, it was like, I was like, that's what I want. That's like, I could just live off of that right there. It's all my lettuce and the kale. And then he had parsley, which of course I would grow cilantro because I'm a salsa girl.
Sure.
Lover. And anyway, yeah, so cool. Well, we're excited to hear about your rain gutters down the line. I'm sure people are going to go check out your website and your podcast too.
I haven't put anything up yet on the gutters, but yeah, but yes, I talked about the challenge. The rain gutters thing is coming. I do have this other kind of a funky growing system called used to be called the hybrid rain gutter grow system. But it basically what it is an aquaponic system without the fish and without running water. I've got a 3-inch pipe with 10 baskets that sit on top of the pipe with net cups that go into the pipe. That pipe is a water reservoir, and you know, it's self-watering. The plants get whatever they need. It water wicks up into the baskets of soil, and it's been great for the past 2 years. It's just been really productive. And it, back on Small Scale Gardening, my first blog, that article on the hybrid rain gutter grow system 101, that is the top. Even this spring is the top post, and so I've got some other plans on how to make it a little more simple, so you don't have to drill the holes and all that. I'm going to try that as a garden too. Oh, my wife doesn't know that. So yes, I'm going to build another another garden bed as well. So, but it's going to be pretty simple, you know? So yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think that's probably why people are checking it out. Yeah. And then that's the other thing. So you go to work, you do the gardening, mm-hmm. and you have time to blog. Like, I haven't even figured out how to fit the blogging thing in. Like, the podcast just takes up every spare minute of my time. I'm lucky if I can even post a picture from our garden. Like, trying to write about what we're doing. That's what I thought I would do in the beginning, and it's kind of just morphed.
Well, and you know, okay, I'm a night owl, so I might stay up a little later and do that kind of thing. And then I'll try to write something on the weekend, you know, one or two articles to just, it's been an evolution too. You kind of get into a flow over time. My first ones were really long, and then you kind of get into a flow of, okay, that might be too long. You know, people don't like a big wall of text. They want to see some pictures. They want bullet lists. You know, we live in such a content rich environment these days, and you know, you got to get the message, get it quick, and then, you know, let people spend more time with it if they want, and provide sources and links and all that kind of thing. So,
okay. I could take some blogging lessons from you, I think. Maybe that's my problem. Somebody was telling me that about my show notes. They're like, quit transcribing your thing and just, you need to curate the content and just put bullet lists, just like you're saying there. She's like, nobody wants to read all that. And I'm like, really? You don't want to read my 39-page PDF of, like, like transcribing my last episode, whatever?
Right, right. And then some people really like that, though. I mean, you look at Nick Ferguson with his new podcast. He writes, like, the whole transcript, and it's kind of useful because you might miss it in the show, but hey, there it is right down there. It just different folks and different tastes, I guess.
Well, for me, it's like when I want to go back and remember what a listener said, I do find sometimes it's long and I'm like, oh, I'm scrolling, especially if I'm looking on my phone. But sometimes I really like that. But I'm a reader, and to me, it's quicker to go read it than it is to go listen to the podcast all over again.
Right, right. You know, yes, so, agreed.
But I don't know. So there's one of these days I'm going to figure the show notes thing out.
Hey, we're just still starting. We're learning as we go. So that's part of it.
I'm tickled that I'm doing, things are going as well. Because like from 2010 to 2014, I had zero hits on my website. Mm. And then since I launched my podcast, GoDaddy's like very specific, zero. Your number is zero.
Wow.
And so 2015, I had like 200 people, or maybe it was 2013, 2014, I had like 200 people. Then I finally launched 2015, 2,000 people. Huh. Now it's been 2,000 since November.
That's
so
wild.
Yeah. So to me, the podcast, my numbers are growing faster than I can keep up, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. It's part of, we call it, I like to call it finding your voice too, and finding that thing that, you know, you're being yourself, and just finding that niche and what people want to hear, and, you know, finding the voice and people listen.
I like that. My friend Joel wrote a best-selling book on Amazon called Finding Your Voice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about something that didn't quite work so well that maybe you thought was going to go a different way, but.
Yeah, that would have to be my peppers. Last year it was a struggle, and I tried to jumpstart things. You know, peppers just take a little longer to germinate, and I was getting kind of frustrated. I planted them. What I did differently this year is I planted them into a seed flat. Last year I just went right to a red solo cup and just dropped the seeds in and said, "Okay, grow." And I was have to grow everything in my basement because I don't really have any good. I'm in a smaller house and I don't have a lot of good southern facing windows, so they don't get the natural light. So I had them under grow lights. And another big key was heating pad. I used a heating pad this year underneath it, so I had a seed flat with cells and the seeds in the cells with soil, and then a heating pad underneath. And last year I just dropped them in red solo cups, said grow. And nothing happened. So somebody said, "Hey, yeah, put them in your oven, and just leave the light.
Oven.
Yeah, right. Leave them in your oven and put the light on. There'll be enough heat. They'll start to say, okay, it's time to grow." I was getting a little desperate. It was getting later in the season, so I said, "Okay, I'll try that." I put them in the oven, turned the light on, and figured nobody would mess with those, right? And I think I had a meeting. I left and I came back, and my wife was laughing, and she's like, oh my gosh, we came home, we were going to put something, a pizza on, we hit it up to 350, 400 degrees, mm-hmm. and suddenly we started smelling this weird smell, and we looked in there, and there's dirt, there's cups, that's melting. So needless to say, that experiment did not go too well. And it just, peppers got planted late. I finally got some to grow. But it just was a comedy of errors. I didn't get as much as I wanted to. And so punt, punt on that last year. But I learned a lot, and I changed methods. And, you know, I think I've got almost 50 peppers growing down in the basement right now, and started with the heating pad and the cells, and the, you know, dampening had taken out a couple, but you know what? I'm having a much better season with peppers, but last year was a struggle.
What do you mean cells?
You know, you can get these packs at the store with, nine different little cells, you know, and you could, you know, like you would buy a flat of geraniums, and they're each in a little cell. You know, I bought a pack of the cells, and so I don't know if that's the right word or not, but mm-hmm. you know, it's a package that where each you can fit eight different packs of these cells in a seed flat, in an 11 by 22 seed flat, and you can grow plants in these little cells. So, you know, some people use the little peat pucks. You know, this is an actual cell. So,
okay.
You know what I'm talking about? Can you visualize it?
Kind of. I don't know. I'm thinking of like when I go to the store and buy a six pack of cauliflower plants or broccoli plants.
Yep. That's right? It. Okay. The cell thing. I call it a cell.
Okay. Got it. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah.
So the people we got our sheep from, we went down for like kind of a little farm tour a few weeks ago, this friend of mine and I. And so I was looking at all her cool, amazing. This woman is like 70 years old and like the powerhouse. I mean, I can't believe what this woman does. She is like,
sounds like
70 something beds and like tons of animals and, you know, just all these starts going. What she was using for heating pads were these really cool, I'm pretty sure they're like Christmas lights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What are you using for heating pads?
I bought these, I don't know what they're called right offhand, but they're a little, I got them right at, like, the big box, we call it Menards here, there's Home Depot, Lowe's, you know, the big box store, and they're pads that fit right under this, under the seed flat, so it's a same size, but, It's a thin pad that plugs right in. It's almost like a heating pad. And I don't know the brand name right off hand, but I'll get you that. But that's what I've been using. I have three of those, and I put the seed tray right on the top, or the seed flat right on top, and it warms it up nicely. I've also used that for those pads for winemaking. I did some homemade winemaking, and basement's cold, so you got to keep the wine warm to keep the fermentation going. I put those around that. It worked great. And then my son is on the varsity basketball team, so we were doing the pasta parties before the big games, and I put those pads under those, kept the pasta warm. So you can use it for a lot of different things. It costs about $20. But I have heard about the rope lights, and you can put it underneath seed flats, and that'll work too.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Tell us about your least favorite activity. I can't even imagine. Is there something that you don't like to do? It sounds like you like to do everything.
Weeding. I don't like weeding. Oh. I really don't like weeding. That just takes me back to being a kid and having this big, nasty bunch of weeds in the garden. I just hate it. And that's been the beauty about the raised beds, you know, is I really don't have to do it. It's I've got a layer of newspaper. I've got a layer of cardboard. It's cardboard, newspaper, and then landscape fabric underneath. So I'm really not getting a lot of weeds in my raised beds. And if they do, they're really easy to pull out. So that's been a huge deal. But weeding, I don't like weeding. It just takes up time and it's unproductive.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, I like picking everything, right? And then that brings a whole new process is hard, you know, preserving it all. But actually, I do like trellising and pruning the tomatoes. That's been one of, you know, because you can actually see some results. I do like that most of all, I think, is just growing some really healthy tomatoes. Yeah. My wife would probably say she sees me singing out there to the plants. So I don't know. I think she's kidding, but
that helps them grow.
Yeah, right? I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. Depends how you sing, I think.
Oh, no. And, you know, I don't know whether there's actually any side. Well, isn't there, like, something about, like, because you're, the carbon dioxide's coming out of your mouth and, like, that's helping them grow some kind of, I'm, like, the least scientific person, so I don't want to, like, but I always thought that was part of it. But I also always feel like if you're singing to your plants, you're just, it's the fact that you're paying attention to them and then you're going to see what they need and just, you know, that's a big part of it, too. Does that make sense?
It does. I don't know.
It was funny because I had to sub in the sixth grade the other day and we're doing science and they were studying like the astronomy, the solar system. And I'm like, like I said, science was like my least subject. Mm. And they asked me a question. I'm like, I have no idea. Google it. You guys all have Chromebooks? Somebody look it
up.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and they've all got smartphones. And they're probably texting and stuff anyway, right?
They race. Like, who could get the Chromebook out fast? Who could jump to a calculator? And who could get their phone out quick enough to, like, I asked them something about, I don't know, with some date, some philosopher, whatever, astronomer. And I was like, well, what year was that? You know, how many years ago was that? It was funny to see the kids race to get the answer. Yeah.
School has changed so much.
Yeah.
I tell you.
But I think it's awesome. Yeah. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
That was a tough one to answer. I kind of like, I do like Curtis Stone, what he's been saying. He's up in Canada and doing urban farming there, and he's been really successful, like $70,000 on a third of an acre. It's been crazy. But his philosophy is get in production. You know, we all get in production. You know, we all sit here on a computer and we're doing the researching and we're reading a book or we're reading a blog and we're all doing all this reading, but we're not actually doing it. And the way you actually learn and become a master is practicing, failing, trying, failing again, and failing a lot. So just try, you know, just get out there, get in production, grow something, see what happens. I, you know, so many people I've talked to, oh, I can't grow anything. I'm going to forget to water it. I can't grow anything. I've got the black thumb. You just got to try, you know, just try. And if it dies, it dies. But if it might grow, you might learn something along the way. So get in production, just try. I like that.
Okay. I like that too. Mm-hmm. I got to say though, and like it seems like a lot of what you've said today is that it does help to find those little tricks and tips that are going to help you be successful. Because like my husband and I could not be more opposites. Like I am totally the brown thumb, black thumb, can barely keep a geranium alive. You know, but I can grow lettuce. I can grow.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because I just made this like little PDF. Listeners, if anybody wants it on, I think it's like the 7 ways to carve more time to your garden. And I was when I posted it in my podcasting group to say, what do you guys think? I was like, hey, I actually planted both of those things in those pictures. I was like, that's my lettuce and those are my sunflowers. I thought it was so funny because usually I'm always posting pictures of things my husband plants. So
right, and I would,
but
I
definitely
would say
start.
That, yeah, definitely start.
Start
I think
small.
Start small. I think the, I think people just get analysis paralysis, and they oh man, I have to read some more. I'm not going to get around to that. There's just no time. You know, you gotta just start. Just try something in even my meager little tomatoes in those containers all those years ago in Illinois. You know, it was a start and it got me going, you know, and when I pulled the chives inside and I thought they were dead and then I had the garage door open in the spring and I was like, wow, these are greening up. Hey, something lived. How about that? Let's do some more, you know. I mean,
awesome.
That's just the way it works.
I like
you
that.
Know?
Yeah. And chives are great for the bees.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my goals this year is to plant more chives because they're like the first thing that blooms and the bees love them and they're maintenance, you know. And they survive. I mean, I think we planted our chives. I have this one chive plant like that was like the first thing we planted. So it's probably 20 something years old.
Sure.
And just, you know, you don't have to do anything. I don't even think you barely have to water it in the summer here in Montana. Like I think that's just a hardy plant herb. I never eat them. I never put chives on anything, but I love those purple flowers. And like I said, the bees love them.
Yeah, I'll throw some on like a baked potato, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one that does, but what the heck? I grew them. Why not, you know?
Yeah. What's your favorite tool? Like if you had to move, if you could only take one tool with you when you go to Wisconsin to your new farm, what are you going to take? What can't
this was
out?
This was a hard one to answer, you know. I was thinking I was thinking a garden hoe. You know, it's a multi-purpose tool. You can break up some soil with it. You can break up the soil in your bed. Make furrows. You can make a hole to put the plant in. It's just all around. And you can defend yourself, right? If a wild animal's coming or, you know, you can defend yourself. It's got a sharp end. But I think it's a good all-around tool. It just, you know, I use it a lot, you know. And I've got small garden beds. So, and probably a trowel is right behind that, you know, just a hand trowel, you know.
Will you describe your deep beds? How many deep beds did you tell me you had?
Let's see. I've got three. One is it's a 14 by 18 inch wide. Another one is a 2x8, 2 foot wide, 8 feet long by, the 18 inch wide one that's longer. That one is 12 inches deep. The next one is 8 inches deep. The 2x8 is 8 inches deep.
Oh, wow.
No. The 3x8, I tried potatoes in there last year. They did okay. I figured out I need to be deeper. That's a 3x8x12. And then I've got two by four, 2 foot by 4 foot. So it's basically we'll just say it's a 2x8, and that's 6. And that's where the peppers have been. I think I'm going to put herbs in that one this year. So, yeah, they're not very deep. They're not super deep beds because I've got that weed barrier underneath there too. So it varies from 6 inches on where the herbs are going to go to, you know, a foot deep on the other couple beds. And then the hybrid rain gutter grow system, those are a foot deep. So it's basically like a cylinder, a foot cylinder, a foot round by a foot deep. So,
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess when I think about it, our beds are all different. I always think of deep beds because the two of the first ones Mike built are like hip high.
Yeah.
Like 3-4 feet tall. But then he does have other ones that are only a foot tall. I just like them because I like to be able to sit on the edge when I am weeding, if there's weeding or harvesting. Like, so can you sit on the edge of all yours?
You could, but I usually take out a pad, and if I'm doing something down low, I'll kneel on a garden pad or a seat cushion or something like that. But the beauty of the vertical, like we were talking about in the rain gutters, is you can put them up, and you don't have to bend over for those. So we'll try that out.
So another thing, and just the woman that I was saying, my friend Daniela was talking about today, she needs more dirt. Like, where do you get your dirt? Because that's kind of a struggle even for us here in Montana is where do you get dirt to fill those bins? Where do you get dirt to fill your pots?
Yep, that is a struggle. And I'm using more of a mix from the square foot garden. I tried the Mitt Lighter. One year I tried the sand and peat moss mix, and it just didn't work for me. So I went back to more of the Mel Bartholomew, 1/3 vermiculite, 1/3 peat moss, 1/3 compost. And I get the compost like at a big box store. Not all black dirt is the same. And you know, I could go to the municipal lot and grab some, but I just don't know where it came from. And especially in this town where we've had some, back in the history of the town, there was some big industry with some very contaminated soil. I don't want to pick just any dirt. I'd rather get something that I'd rather pay a little bit. I don't have that much garden space. So I think I can buy some, when we eventually move to more of a homestead, which is, this is all setting up to be, I'm hoping that the soil is in pretty good shape out there, that we're on an old farm or something. And I might have to, that's where maybe some animals come into it, where you're rebuilding soil and such, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah. And also like a big thing I've been learning about this year is growing your own, like cover crops to produce soil.
Oh yeah.
Going to interview this woman from Bountiful Gardens, and they have this biointensive method, and it seems like she's going to talk about 60% of the space that they grow is like that green cover crop to build the soil.
Oh yeah.
And actually only like 40% of it is food, and 60% of it is just soil building.
Right.
And somehow they, the whole point is to like be able to grow enough to feed your family. They have like this little method figured out that you can grow everything you need all of your food needs. I don't know. I'm super excited. Yeah, we actually recorded it, and the recording didn't work, and we have to re-record it.
So. Well, I'm all over that because I think that's where a lot of these urban farmers are going, and the market gardeners. They're using cover crop when they're not, you know, in production. They're using nitrogen fixers, you know, to try to build up the soil.
Exactly.
Using like a dried turkey compost. I know that's what Curtis Stone does. He's got a supplier that provides dried turkey compost. I've heard rabbit poop, if you got rabbits, like their manure is just fantastic. Doesn't need to be treated or anything. It's just drop it and go, essentially, like they do. But if you can build the soil, it all comes back to that soil and the cover crops. That's something that is interesting to me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. This woman, mm-hmm. Liz Carlisle, just wrote this book called The Lentil Underground, and she kind of is trying to figure out, like, if we know this is best practices. And she came and studied a bunch of farmers that are doing it on the east side of Montana, which is really nice because it's big, you know, it's no rain. They don't irrigate.
Wow.
And they're being successful. And she's like, if we know this, why aren't they doing it in Iowa and in the Midwest? Mm-hmm. And she talks about, you know, and a lot of it is like weird. It's like social pressure and, you know, worried about the banks aren't going to finance us. Mm. And just like, you know, it's so ingrained that we're going to use these chemicals. So we're doing it this way, even though we know that in the long term, over the long haul, this other way is better. So, she kind of investigates that. And so, but that was really where I learned. That's why we got our chickens many years ago, was the eggs are just bonus. Those guys are here to fertilize.
Oh, yeah. We can have chickens here in our suburb, and that's probably a topic for a different show. I don't have them personally. I've never had them. My mm-hmm. parents did when they had the farm, but mm-hmm. That's something we're going to be exploring because it's yeah, when we get there, we'll be.
And I guess that,
I'm a renter, and I can't have them right now. So that's the other thing. I'm doing this, and I don't own any of the property. So the area I took over was all full of just junk. You know, the owner or somebody had thrown all this branches and brambles and just junk back there, and I cleaned it all up and put in these beds. So when the time comes, I'm going to have to restore it somehow, take out the raised beds, and then just plant some. You know, plant some flowers or something back there and just leave it for the next person. So
unless the next person happens to be a gardener, might appreciate all that. It'd be a shame to take that. That should be like a plus to buying that out, renting that
right?
house.
Exactly. I would think so.
So, okay.
You can hear the rest of my interview with Tom in part two of this episode 136 of the Organic Gardener Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.